You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. The show is Melting Pot, and right now it's our distinct pleasure to welcome in all the way from Australia, Hiatus Coyote. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, great. Good.
We're good, yeah.
We are just overjoyed to have you here. You're playing a few shows around in Los Angeles in the moment while you're here, and also here in the U.S., and it's really... really nice to have you here and doing kind of a different kind of take on your sound, it seems, kind of more of a stripped down approach today.
Yeah, well, we couldn't really, I mean, it's a radio studio. You can't really bring in like all your synths and, you know, it's usually what, like 7 or 8 DIs just in our setup. So we didn't want to cause the headache. But I mean, it gives you this a really beautiful opportunity to kind of hear the details in the compositions more than just like, there's all this shit going on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right. So this we have for you guys. It's a special treat. Once again, Hiatus Coyote here in our studios. I'm just going to throw it over them for a couple of songs. Hiatus Coyote here on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Jasmine ripping around your clothes.
doors. Ramble through the hot eons, the double never apart. Like our fingers, the morning splurge. Murky depth can tear your heart. Ooh, deep hole, too deep a chance to sift. Harsh may burn you, love to seek truth, shed in you.
You just heard music from Hiatus Coyote performing live here in our studio, kind of stripped down, not quite unplugged, but kind of a stripped down approach to what we generally hear from the band, what we've heard on their recording so far. And we're going to sit in for them for a moment, just to talk about the band, talk about this music. First thing, if we could just really quickly just to introduce yourselves and the instruments that you play.
I'm Benda. I play bass and laptop in the band.
I'm Napalm. I sing and play lead guitar, occasionally piano.
And I'm Perrin. I play drums.
And I'm Simon, and I play keyboards.
Okay.
Perrin also does production. He's modest, though.
Yeah, one of the things, people who are familiar with the music and have heard at least recorded work on this EP, kind of, they know there's some much more kind of expansive sound. There's a lot of live instrumentation, but also production that comes into it. This is really different. It's again, like, we're so thankful for having you in, but also to do this just kind of like a different vibe, like, brings out, as you were saying earlier, some different qualities of the group. You guys are a relatively new group. I thought I'd read you guys only really been together for a couple of years at this point.
Yeah, and nearly three.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could say just a little bit about how you guys came together to actually form this band.
A few of us were living in a house in Melbourne that was kind of a musical hub, and a lot of people were kind of hanging out there and making a lot of sort of cool stuff happen, real original musicians sort of doing their thing, and we kind of sort of formed around that house. Like, Bender and Perrin met Nay, like, on different sort of sides of the coin, but we all kind of came together at this place and rehearsed there and really kind of developed our sound at this house.
Had you guys played at all, either in other bands with one or two, or before coming together?
Well, me and Simon had played a bit together. Okay. Simon was one of the, like, first musicians that I met when I moved to Melbourne, and just met him through doing, like, yeah, all sorts of gigs, funk gigs and jazz and random weddings and whatever. We were just sort of on that sort of, you know, miscellaneous gig circuit together. Yeah.
And was it kind of like a light bulb moment when the four of you got together, or did it take a little time to develop the chemistry?
I think the four of us as a unit, it was pretty much, it was instant. But Bender worked on my original compositions previously, and we tried out a couple other musicians, and it was really traumatic, and it was the first original project that I'd ever started, and it was traumatic. I would just be like a wreck, and then and it just so happened that everyone was like living together, and you know, Bender thought that Simon would be too busy doing gigs to even bring it up, and but like we all just kind of came together, and that from the first rehearsal where it was us four together, it was like we knew that, I don't know, you could just feel that there was a trust in each other's musicianship, even though we were all growing on some level, you know, because it's a combination of, you know, people that have studied music or just like intuitive by ear. So, yeah, I think that that unity of kind of putting your ego aside to just kind of contribute collectively, you know, everybody's ideas was really beautiful. And yeah, and it's expanded from there, and it still feels like, you know, we still have so much to explore as well collectively, which is really exciting.
Now, as a DJ, as somebody who writes about music and thinks about music a lot, like genre is really important to us because we feel like we need to be able to describe stuff and kind of put things into their proper boxes. And for the most part, it seems like when people describe your sound, they put it into kind of like a future soul kind of camp. And I was wondering, to me, the especially the stuff that's on the EP and even kind of hearing you in this kind of new way today, like, it's a really, really hard sound to pin down. But I was wondering, like, how you guys feel about kind of being put into a genre and kind of your thoughts on your sound.
It's always been hard. Sorry, Bennett.
I don't know. I guess it's something that we're asked about a lot, but is not really something that we think about a lot. Mm-hmm. We're not really concerned with what it is.
It's generally just, you know, people like me that are always trying to force you guys to be one thing.
Well, you know, everything that we do is a reaction to each other and a reaction to the song and the ideas that are presented. And you know, and you can hear like any sort of idea, you know, in its original form, like so many ways, you know, you can hear so many different grooves on a chord progression or feels that are suggested and, you know, and textures. So that's, you know, that's kind of the approach we take. It's just making sort of the most out of every musical moment. And yeah, it's, you know, it's just sort of pulling like all our influences and everything that we've learnt from our different musical experiences into this one project. So yeah, it's kind of eclectic just because of that, really. It wasn't like, you know, a conscious thing that we were trying to do like one particular sound. It's just a sort of reaction to each other, you know.
It would seem like that's one of the kind of benefits of being kind of a newer band, and also, it, you know, in the same way that it seems like people, when they hear your music, like they have like an immediate reaction, like a strong reaction to it. It seems like in coming together, there was also that same kind of like strong reaction to the different elements coming together. Mm. There wasn't a lot of, you know, like, should we sound like this or should we sound like that? Mm. It just kind of is developed organically.
Alchemy. Yeah. For sure.
Now, the sound, like, how's the response been in Australia to this sound and to you guys playing, and is it similar? How does it compare with kind of the worldwide experience and explosion that happened after you guys put out the EP?
As far as like our shows, you know, we've always had really strong support at our shows from like day one, really. You know, when we first started playing, we'd just be playing to, like, you know, a room just packed full of, like, a lot of people that we knew, you know, who were, like, really excited to see what we were doing together and really supported that. And then over time, it's sort of, you recognize less and less people in the room, you know, and it's sort of, yeah, now it's, you know, we do have a lot of support from fans in Australia. But, you know, it's a different landscape in the sort of industry sense. You know, it's a pretty small scene in Australia, you know? It's
definitely monopolized in a lot of ways.
There's not, like, a billion different cities, and there's not, like, a whole lot of support for left-field stuff. There just aren't as many like, channels for that, you know, to get that kind of thing out there, so...
But I think pretty globally, like, it's pretty amazing the response that we get from people. And not just, like, a certain demographic. Like, it's a really interesting mix of people that, you know, that like our music, you know. Like, from, like, the spectrum of age to, like, people all around the world. Like, I've had people in Libya write to me and people in, like, Trinidad and, like, you know, South America. So, like, it's pretty... You know, it's pretty crazy. Like, places that we haven't even toured. And then you'll see, like, cats with, like, Slayer shirts, like, headbanging at the front. And then, like, a seven-year-old, you know, wearing some glitter ensemble. It's, like, it's amazing. It's really humbling as an artist for the sake of just, like, honestly expressing yourself. You know, rather than, like, we're trying to do this for this particular type of person. It's, like, we're just trying to... explore our creativity, because otherwise we'd just be like, I don't know, it's not about, you know, it's not about jumping through hoops for people or to fit in the right boxes so that we can market ourselves. It's just about, you know, exploration, and I think people get that, and that's what's so beautiful about music, is like, it's empathic, so you know, it's like, it's purely based on your intention, and people can feel that, so the response has been really really beautiful.
A lot of times, I think, especially, you know, in the kind of position I'm in, where I hear tons of music, quite a lot of it not particularly good, particularly stuff coming from major labels, and sometimes it's very easy to kind of get down on kind of the present construction of the music industry, especially here in the U.S., but kind of global music industry.
For sure.
But it's incredible, both that stories like this and kind of moments like this continue to come about with all of kind of very prepackaged stuff that's out there. Just good music really still seems to just shine through.
For sure. And I think also because of that contrast, it makes it stand out even more.
Makes it sound even gooder.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's so... There's this, like, kind of, like... It's so easy for people to become pop stars now.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you're, like, vaguely... You don't even need to be vaguely attractive. As long as it's, like, you know, as long as it's, like, highly repetitive and irritated and, like, marketed in the right way, then, like, people will just lap it up. And I think as long as you stay true to, you know, why you decided to become a musician in the first place, then I think it comes across and people get it.
And I think, too, you know, the way the industry's changed, you know, it's sort of... I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's just kind of the same as television. Like, so many people I know now just don't own television. And, you know, someone, like, they'll find the thing that they want to experience for themselves, like, wherever, you know, and there's, like, so many other ways to, like, access it and not have to be... force-fed all the other bullshit.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's the same thing with
the
music.
The internet's,
you know,
amazing like that.
Yeah, it's, like, so easy to find stuff and discover new stuff, and you just got to, like, you know, have sort of the right people pointing you in the right direction sometimes. But, yeah. But, yeah, the mainstream is pretty depressing. I try to avoid it at all costs.
This is... It's a good thing, generally, for your general health to do so. And, you know, this is the thing. In some ways, it seems, all this may be too new, but it seems like there's potentially a kind of tension when you put out music purely on love, and it does get picked up, and it does get greater distribution, and many, many, many people hear it throughout the world. It doesn't seem like this would be the case, just based off of what you've already said. But then, is there almost a kind of greater pressure to not necessarily conform to the larger industry, but almost to conform to certain expectation that people start building for your band once they've heard your sounds?
People will do that before it's success. And
you're
some people
keep doing what's true to you.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't really matter.
The reason we are where we are is because of what we've been doing. I mean, to change that would change the path. And change the people that like us, and the all the acclaim that we've been getting has been because of the approach that we've been taking, and then to shift that, I don't think would be very wise.
And also, they're successful, amazing musicians. Like Radiohead is like massive, and they're like they still have Bjork. You know, like they still have their artistic integrity. You know, it's like it's. I mean, there is that cliche of like people kind of selling out or whatever, but it's like it's not a definite curse. I guess like, there are a lot of examples of really amazing
selling out to make money from music. That's another conversation. Actually. It's a whole different topic.
Which maybe some other time we'll get into. We'll see. A little further down the road, we'll see. But
when I've got like a Nike tattoo.
You're covered in sponsorships.
Yeah, we'll be on a KFC ad.
Yeah, we'll see. I remember. No. But the thing that I think that, you know, especially when you mention artists like Radiohead or Bjork, that integrity in their sound is extremely important to them. That's the thing that they really guard. And it seems like as long as you do that, you're going to continue on that right path, you know, and it's refreshing to hear that, especially from musicians as a collective kind of new to this, though it seems like all of you have been playing music for a fair amount of time. This debut record, It doesn't really sound like a band that's only kind of known each other for a year or so, which I guess in terms of when it was released, you self-released it last year.
Yeah.
And so I'd imagine the recording was 2011, early 2012?
Yeah, it was about I think it was April 2011.
Got together, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for you, it's maybe a little bit older, the experience of recording this, but it was re-released this year, and now even more people have heard it. And I guess technically it's an EP. It's a long EP because there are 10 tracks on it.
It's an EP.
But it's technically an EP.
What we consider it as an EP, for sure.
Okay. Right. And one of the things about this is kind of just like as a listener, as a fan, is one of the things that's kind of frustrating about Flying Lotus. Creates these incredible, you know, sonic landscapes and these songs that are like just like a minute, minute and a half, minute and 40 seconds. And about half of the EP is kind of like that, where it's these shorter tracks. In some cases, they seem to kind of sonically work as interludes between songs. In other cases, it seems like either these are kind of like, this is where it was at and this is what you wanted, or maybe they're sketches of songs. I was interested if you could talk a little bit about kind of putting the EP together, because it doesn't really seem like it's just a collection of individual tracks. Like, it seems like there's a flow intended.
Like, we started off, with, feature songs, like the ones that we've already been playing live.
Okay.
And we thought, you know, that would be cool to put on the EP, and then like start with those songs, record them any way you can or whatever, and then you start putting the thing together, you know, like, I don't know, like the interlude vibe is like kind of all our homage to like hip hop albums and stuff, or for me personally, like J Dilla vibes,
for sure. They're like donuts, like most of the songs are like a minute long,
So it's like this, like, kind of, you know, putting that influence in our music as well, because it's like something that we all love so much. And the methods behind making that record were very much like you're making a hip-hop track or something as well, like sampling yourself and, you know, doing that stuff. But
and again, it's like for us as listeners, a lot of times when we think of kind of things in individual tracks like that, kind of it can be kind of a frustrating, like, because we want more of that kind of sound. But I mean, I think this is certainly true of Flying Lotus's work, certainly true of Dilla's work with the kind of instrumental records like Donuts, that it's Madlib as well, that really these are kind of extended pieces and they're more meant to be heard kind of in their totality. And it kind of seems like Talk Tomahawk is like that as well, that you want a full listening experience as opposed to like bit by bit.
Yeah. And like Dead Air, you know, it's like you want it to be a whole, it's a journey essentially, you know.
So, yeah, start to finish, for sure.
It's, I mean, like, and we extend upon, like, we've been extending upon the interlude ideas, like, in a live format as well. So, but, I don't know. They were just kind of, like, I think a lot of the interludes I would write to after they'd already been worked.
Mm.
So I think that that adds another element to them, kind of, because naturally the way I write is very structural. You know, like I write a lot of songs like in entirety, like in their entireties.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So when I'm given a piece of music, I write to it, like, even though the piece of music is only that amount long, I like kind of approach it in a way of like, that's how much time you have to create a whole holistic story. Structure,
yeah.
Sort of thing. So that it's like, even though it's short, it's like everything that I needed to say has been said, sort of thing. And that's why maybe that's why it feels like they're songs rather than like, you know, like with Ocelot, for example, like it's kind of like less of a, yeah. But the intention of it was to, you know, be like a connecting.
Yeah, and I think you certainly get that if you listen to the EP from start to finish. Like, you know, there's certainly a flow to the music. One of the things I did want to ask you, even though, as we were just saying, it's kind of look at the EP and these 10 individual tracks as more almost like 10 parts of one composition.
Mm.
I did want to highlight and talk a little bit about one in particular, the song Nakamura, a song that in many instances might be the first song that people hear from the group. It was the first song that I heard from the group, and like immediately, this was in the summer earlier, and like immediately was like, I was concerned because I was driving the car. I was like concerned that I was going to have an accident because it was just like I couldn't fully comprehend like what was going on. It was just like too much goodness. And I needed to find, like, I didn't know if I should use, I can't use my phone to write down what this is. I need to write, you know, I need to, you know, and like just that. And like, I think a lot of people have like that really strong reaction. That's part of the reason why, you know, from word of mouth, like it, you know, spread to DJs at KCRW like Anthony Valdez and to Giles Peterson and to all these, you know, people, big names who are fans of your music now. One of the things that to me is really unique about that song is lyrically, it presents some things lyrically that you actually don't often hear. In the first instance, it's a song written and sung by a woman, directed towards another woman, but it's a love song. And in most instances, love songs seem to be very focused on kind of heterosexual relationships and almost exclusively focused on romantic love. And so it's rare in and of itself to hear a song from a woman to another woman, but it's also not, it doesn't seem like at least, a song about a romantic love, but a really deep, deep affection for somebody else. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about kind of the theme in Nakamura.
Well, yeah, there's so many different ways to love people. Mm. And in music, it's usually only focused on the romantic side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the song was written about a friend of mine that was, she was an artist, and she moved to the desert, to Central Australian desert, to work with indigenous artists.
Mm.
And I mean, it's kind of rare in our country. I mean, like, it's not even, there's a lot of kind of colonial shame, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, and it's the history of, like white the colonization of, like, indigenous people in Australia is, like, it's not really that long ago that it occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, not even mentioned in the education system. Like,
yeah.
They're just kind of like, oh, yeah, and there's some, like, there was indigenous people, but whatever, we're not going to focus on that.
Yeah.
And so for a woman who's, like, was the same age as me and was in this amazing city, and she was an artist and, you know, going to warehouse parties, and, like, for her to just, like, we both went to the desert together, and I was playing my first solo show, festival show in the desert, and we went together, and she decided that she would stay on. She's like, I'm dropping my life in Melbourne, and I want to come out here and work with these people, and you know, and essentially as like an art therapist, but also like learning their ways and like learning, you know, how to mix different, like where to find different ochres to mix for paints and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really struck me, you know, like to have that. There's so many people wearing these masks of like, I'm an artist and I'm, you know, But that was just such a potent move for her, like, and for a young woman that hasn't really been brought up with that awareness. So the song is like about my, just how proud I was of her to make such a strong move, like move in her life at such a young age. But also like spending a lot of time out in the desert. It's my homage to that space, the land out there and the people, but also a friend of mine. And it's crazy. I never thought that this would be the song that everyone picked up on, because we kind of just like recorded it with five mics in a room, and like the vocal tracking was done like into a mattress, like in parents' bedroom, and, like, you know. And so
it's funny, when I first heard it, I thought it was going to be definitely the one.
Really? Yeah. I was like, I don't know if we should even put this on here. But Nakamari is a skin name, like a tribal name that she was given by an elder. So it's cool, though, that this is the song that people pick up on, because it's like, we're not very patriotic, but it's a very specifically Australian.
Yeah, it's a very specific reference in the name. And
it was cool, because like when we first put the clip up, the boys had never been to the desert before, so like the film clip was just like, we didn't have much money for like, you know, for any like high budget clip or anything. So it was like, well, you guys haven't seen it, let's go out there. And so it was just us hanging out there. But like,
it's a really awesome experience.
Yeah, but on YouTube, other than our clip, I mean, it's different now, but when it first came out, the only other clip, like, you know, the recommended pages were all just indigenous artists with a skin name Nakamara. So it was like, so in the early stages, like when people check out the video, it's like the only other related clips were like these old indigenous women like painting in the middle of nowhere. So
So I mean, even an additional layer of kind of uniqueness in the fact that, you know, a lot of music that we get here in the States from Australia tends to be more of kind of the rock variety. And aside from accents, tends to sound more or less like the rock and roll that we have here. But that song in particular, you know, for the reasons that I mentioned, and also the very, like, very specific reference, not just to a particular person, but to a particular place and a very particular feeling, kind of seems to open up a window to not just your sounds, but also to kind of thinking about and looking at Australia in a little bit different way for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it wasn't intentional, but that's kind of what has occurred, which is really beautiful. Yeah. But, I mean, before you mentioned it just now, like the whole a woman singing to another woman, like a love song, like I never even, I don't know, I never thought of it like that, because it's just like, I love unconditionally, and yeah, and I want to explore deeper, like with my songwriting lyrically. I mean, there's a new song called "Breathing Underwater," and it's about the different ways that you can love, you know, like the love that someone puts into the way they make a cup of tea, or like, you know, like a Tuareg silversmith, like the love he puts into his work. And there's this plant called a Jericho rose, and it's like a cactus that can survive over 100 years without water, and then as soon as it rains, it blossoms, and so like the love that plant would experience from like the tiniest amount of water, you know. And I don't know, I just think it's such a common topic for songwriting, but it's not really, the other ways to love aren't really explored that often.
It's pretty extraordinary when you think about recorded music, like how, you know, somebody did a study on this, and it was like some crazy percentage, like 70% of songs are like love songs or about love, or, you know, it's like a huge percentage.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that there's still quite a lot to say, and a wide variety of things to continue to explore. And it's especially nice, you know, to get you guys to explore it in your music. Kind of connected to greater exploration, so Talk Tomahawk came out last year and then came out again this year. I would imagine at this point you're working on new music, recording new music. Is that the case?
Yeah.
Okay. And how has that process been different from these initial recordings up to now?
Very different.
Yeah.
we have a better idea of what we're doing.
Yeah, that's true. And we have a different space, like that place that I was talking about before that we're living in. That's where we recorded Talk Tomahawk. So in that house and it was a different vibe to what's happening now. Like we didn't.
I was gonna say we only recorded like two songs in that live space in the old house.
Yeah, I guess, but like a lot of the stuff was recorded there too, like the vocals and tracking of stuff.
So is the new stuff like in what might be considered like a proper studio or?
Well, no, we just relocated. We moved house.
Yeah. And then we kind of built a new studio.
That's nice.
So
he actually built it with his hands. All the money we made from touring went straight into making a studio.
That's nice.
So we've got two rooms now that we're kind of doing this record in. But we're also using other spaces and but it's just sort of opened our eyes to what we can sort of do with this next record in the sense of what kind of sounds can we get and we just sort of signed to like a major as well, and that's kind of given us sort of an idea about like, because we've got some finances as well, so now we're like, okay, we can buy some nice
so now gear. Simon spends all his time on eBay looking for really exotic scents.
No, but you know, it's I think that's, we still got a really similar approach to how we did the first record.
Because it works.
I would say it's, I mean, not to be, you know, I would say it's a totally different approach.
Fundamentally, like, when we're sitting in that room and, like, pulling sounds, like, the same kind of, like, for me, it's a similar approach in the sense where, like, we're exploring, we're pulling sounds that we're kind of into and like, finding those sounds. Mm. And you know, what's happening this time is we just sort of opened up our bag of goodies, and it's sort of getting bigger and bigger, and like we're sort of our scope on what a good sound is definitely sort of getting bigger, and the way that we can get those sounds as well, like the approach we take to recording too.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to ask I was thinking about as you were saying that. Is it kind of like the bag of goodies? Like, is it literally, like kind of bringing in new instruments and kind of new kind of sonic textures and sounds into it? Or is it more about kind of approaches to recording, or maybe even both?
It's totally both.
Yeah?
Mm. I mean, that's just it. The whole reason we are together and the whole reason we're in a band and we create together is because it's purely explorative. And that goes down to the recording element of it as well. So it's kind of like, you never really know what you're looking for, but the more you look for what you're looking for, the better you get at finding it, I guess.
that shouldn't make any sense at all, but it makes perfect sense.
Right, okay, great.
You know? It's like on paper that shouldn't make sense, but it makes perfect sense as a sentiment and clearly makes good sense musically. Once again, you guys, you're here, you know, we're recording this, and you're going to continue doing some shows here in the U.S. and then some shows in Europe. And then I would imagine after the touring is done that maybe then finalizing the album or
like... It's going hard. Hopefully finally. Who knows?
In between. Maybe we try and record.
There's not necessarily like a set date. You know, it's just, it, you know, I ask because it's like I want more and more music, you know, just like everybody else who hears you. And so I'm just wondering, like, is there like a set date where, like, you're or even kind of a sketch of when we'll get even more music from Hiatus Coyote?
There kind of is. There's a pseudo plan. It comes together as it does.
I don't know, even know if you can tell us. It might have to be more of a secret.
Hopefully by the end of next year. I mean, we hope so. But the cool thing is, like, the major that we've signed with is an imprint of Sony, and it's called Flying Buddha, and it's Salam Remy's imprint. And he's, you know, iconic producer. So he's coming from a background of being a producer. So it's like, it's crazy. We're in this really beautiful situation where we have the funding and the muscle of Sony, but it's almost an independent label.
Yeah.
And because he's an artist, he gets the process, you know, and he's like, you know, like, this is when it would be good to have it in because it'll coincide with a good release date, which will be more beneficial for you. More like that rather than like, you need to have it in or else I'm taking your teeth out. You know? Mm-hmm. So, and he's like, he's super, he trusts us musically and we trust him to like, you know, he just wants us to hand in our best work.
Yeah.
If it takes a little bit extra time, then it takes a little bit extra time. Sometimes you never really know. It might come together.
But
you can't really gauge it. But yeah. we've got an approximate that, like, hopefully we'll have it by the end of next year.
Okay.
And we're working hard. Like, we're going really hard since we got back from
we
last
promise.
Tour. We've been, like, going, had about a week off, and then we've just been, like, recording and rehearsing.
It's pretty crazy.
That's the stance, yeah. Like, when we're not touring, we're at home recording.
Yeah, I often mention this when I talk to bands about, you know, kind of this the period in between a recording and new music that, you know, from the standpoint of listeners, it's like we always kind of want more. But I think the thing that's special both about the relationship that you have to kind of the production aspect of it and maybe also to the listeners, to the fan base, is, you know, we'd rather you not rush things. Like, we want it the way you want it.
Right.
That kind of thing, right?
Awesome.
So it's nice, but it's enough for us, perhaps, to know that there's going to be new music, that you're hard at work on it, and it's going to be coming shortly.
Sometimes that tension is good, too. You know? It's like
true.
Al Green's vocals, he never quite gives it to you.
Mm.
He's always like, I don't know. There's tension in it, and that's what's beautiful, and that's what attracts
you
about.
So, you know, hold it back a little bit, but don't hold it back too long.
Don't let it go, right?
Please don't hold it back too long.
Well, there's a you know, we've recorded a new track that hasn't been recorded yet that you guys haven't heard that you'll hear today, but like a super stripped back version of it. So,
cool.
I mean, in our live shows, like, we're constantly, you know, playing a lot of new material and stuff that hasn't been recorded yet. So, if for, you know, whatever reason you're not getting your fix from our record or our online content, like, come through to a show, and it's usually pretty up to date because we like to challenge ourselves. So it's like, hey, let's play that song that's kind of not really finished, but we're really excited about playing it. And so, like, we really challenge ourselves as musicians in the live format. So, there's always an opportunity to experience the new shit that we're working on.
And that's a really fantastic thing for us to hear. And I was wondering if we could maybe throw it back to you for a couple more songs?
Yeah, of course.
I guess so.
Absolutely.
All right. We've been talking with the group Hiatus Coyote here at KPFK, and we're going to throw it back to them for a couple more songs here in the studio. Thank you. You just heard a couple more songs from Hiatus Coyote performed live here in our studios. A different sound than you generally might have heard from the group, but a very welcome sound. I can't express the gratitude nearly enough to you guys for coming in. It's really, really, really quite fine. So thank you so much for coming in.
Not a problem.
It's a privilege. Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Here now is one of the tracks from the EP, Talk Tomahawk, one of the ones that we talked about in the interview, as a matter of fact, one of my favorite songs of this year, maybe my song of the year. Nakamura is the name of the song, coming from Hiatus Coyote, right now on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Tip.